Hello, foolish mortals, and welcome to the Final Boys Podcast, Episode 2. Connor, we did it.
Woo! Got out of the group chat.
We actually recorded an episode, and we did it.
Who knew that we could do it?
We did the thing. And that's the first, you know, that's the biggest thing you have to do, is doing the thing for the first time.
It's because we were determined. We were determined to do it.
Oh, yes.
Very.
Well, for listeners that don't know, I'm in New York, and Connor's in California, so we're literally recording from two different coasts right now. So,
and you know how hard it is to figure out time zones when trying to figure out a time to record.
That is very true. But that's the commitment that we have for you guys, is we are willing to brave math and mathematics to figure out recording time.
If we don't like math. So that shows a lot.
That's why we're in the creative industry.
That's why we chose the industry where you don't have to do math.
So our last episode was a tier list of the classic horror movies from the 1920s to the 60s. Hopefully we didn't piss anybody off, but if we did,
we probably did. Yeah.
We probably did. But we're not sorry, because those are our opinions.
Yeah.
And you know what? We know better.
True. We have more experience. We're in movies. Ha.
Yeah, exactly. We've been on the screen. No.
In the theater.
We've been in the theater. You know, so. That was the weirdest experience for me, though, was going to my first movie premiere and seeing myself on, like, a big screen. And literally all I could think about was, like, God damn, my face looks big.
That's every time I see myself. Like, sometimes I don't like to hear myself because I'm like, God, do I really sound like that?
Oh, that was me when I was editing the last episode of the podcast. I was like, why do I say I mean and literally like every fourth word?
And I found out like me and some friends like do a joke where we just keep on saying like, you gotta do this or you gotta do that. And now I find myself that I'm actually like saying that without thinking it because I've done it so much.
Well, they say, like, your vocabulary starts to change based on, like, the five people you hang around the most. So my friend Jack always says, like, hey, what's up, my guy? Like, he always says, my guy. And now I've started saying it, and yeah, I just find that very hilarious.
That explains a lot, actually, for me now.
I know. And apparently my, like, catchphrase that, like, other people have started to adopt because they hang out with me is, that's pretty punk rock. Apparently I say that about everything.
I've like hung out with you a bit. Yeah. You do say it.
I say it all the time, but honestly, that's not the worst catchphrase.
I also say bro a lot, like too much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh god.
I'll be playing video games and like, bro, what is this guy doing? Like literally, bro.
Hey, at least you don't say lit.
Oh, that would be terrible if I said lit.
That would be awful. The only good lit is the band.
The only good lit is when someone's actually lit ablaze.
Oh. Dang, you really are a horror villain, like we were talking about in the last episode. Oh, God.
Sorry, well. I'm still going through my Joker arc. It's fine. Just forget about it.
We got to do an episode coming up about Fully Ado when that comes out. I'm so excited.
I love how we're just talking about more episodes we gotta do.
Yeah.
As we're recording episodes.
You guys are hearing the creative process right now.
You guys are in the studio with us.
Yeah, you guys have an insight. I also want to extend a special welcome to our watchers who are watching us on the YouTube channel. You guys are creepy, so thank you for watching us. Hi guys. I'm gonna try and make the video interesting. I'll throw up pictures and fun things like that.
VFX, just explosion.
Just... It'll be like that iPhone app that we all had when we were younger, and that you would just like put like a car falling onto like your cat or something using like really shitty VFX.
It's just terrible VFX, yeah.
Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. But then you look at like movies from like the 90s and 80s and like they literally used those VFX in movies and it's the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Or if you're one movie, you just will put in the finished product, VFX goes here.
Oh, are you talking about Velocipaster?
Yeah. I was hoping that you would know.
I love Velocipaster. Are you kidding me?
I was hoping you would get the reference.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Absolutely.
If anyone wants to see the best horror movie ever, look up Velocipaster.
Yeah, and if anybody just wants to see the best movie ever made, look up Fateful Findings by Neil Breen.
Or if anyone wants to look up a real good movie, look up Birdemic.
That is an incredible film.
Oh my god. We need to do a tier list of all these joke movies.
Yeah, we should. Yeah. My new goal is to get Neil Breen on this podcast.
Well, I mean, it could happen.
I mean, he has a new movie coming out, so we could have him, like, publicize the movie on here.
True. This is something we could do.
I'm going to start a change.org petition to get Neil Breen on our podcast.
And everyone listening, either if you're just listening or you're watching, if you don't sign that petition, I know where you are.
Oh my god.
I know where you live. Yeah, you on 25122.
Yeah.
Something road. I don't know.
You know, I would just like to issue a formal apology for Connor's threats. They are a bit, so...
wait, this is a bit.
All right, changing the topic.
just a quick, like, oh, we're changing the topic.
Okay, so here's what we're here for today.
Anyway, horror movies.
Connor, we're going to talk about it. We're not going to live out the horror movies, okay?
Ah, why?
I'm sorry.
Oh, nards.
Oh, wow. I haven't heard that in... and like literally since 2008.
I don't know why I just like thought of it.
No, it's fun. I mean, I'm pretty sure it was ingrained in all of our like psyches.
Yeah.
You know what I just had a revelation of like I literally like woke up in bed being like holy shit. I forgot that was a thing.
What was it?
The Fushigi.
Oh my god, you just unlocked a core memory.
I know, I want to, when I'm gigging with my band, I want to bust out a Fushigi on stage and start doing like 20 minutes of Fushigi tricks.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I literally am obsessed. I want that. I want one.
It's
so
just
badly.
All of these things from our childhood, we'll just be sitting down, like we're laying in our bed and just auto, like... out of nowhere, it's just there, it's back. The memory's there.
I just want to be David Bowie from Labyrinth. I mean, he had 4 Fushigis he was using, which was pretty dope.
He also had quite the song.
Oh, yes, he did.
Anyway, do you want to tell the viewers what we're doing?
Absolutely. So... we are going to be doing a deep dive into our 2 favorite movies from the classic horror era that we discussed last time. So if you guys haven't listened to that podcast, I would listen to it so you have some context and you can hear me nerd out about horror movies from that era.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Connor, who should go first?
I think you should go first.
All right. Well, everybody, let's all travel to Paris. We're going to talk about Phantom of the Opera for a little bit. So Phantom came out in 1925. There's been a bunch of remakes of it, but this was the first filmed version. It was based off of Gaston Leroux's novel, entitled Phantom of the Opera, or actually in French, it's Le Phantom de l'Opera, so it's a little more pretentious. So this movie grossed around $2 million in the box office when it first came out, which with inflation, it's around $29.5 million in today's money. So very successful movie. The cast, it starred Lon Chaney as the Phantom, Mary Philbin as Christine Daae, Norman Carey as Vicomte Raoul de Chagny. So this was a very big break for horror because it was the first Universal monster movie. It highlights Lon Chaney's incredible makeup skills. It's why they called him the Man of a Thousand Faces.
Which he's really talented at what he does.
He's incredible, literally incredible. You guys are probably familiar with the Phantom of the Opera musical, which unfortunately just closed after its 35-year run at Broadway's Majestic Theater.
It'll be back. It'll be back.
Yeah, it'll be back. I mean, Andrew Lloyd Webber said so. So why don't we trust the composer? The Phantom of the Opera is there inside your mind. But for those of you that don't know, the Phantom of the Opera follows the story of a beautiful young opera singer named Christine Daae, who is a singer at the Paris Opera House. And she is coached and taught by a mysterious man in a mask who lives in the bowels of the Paris Opera House. He is her angel of music. And this doesn't, you know, sit quite right with Raoul, who saves Christine from the Phantom. But I'm on Team Phantom, personally. And I know that's a controversial opinion, but I love the Phantom, and I think
He deserves
happiness. Yeah, I'm on Team Phantom through and through. I hate Raoul. I hate that character so much, but the Phantom is my... Phantom's my boy. I love that character. I literally have two Phantom of the Opera tattoos. So this movie was directed by Rupert Julian, and it was shot in Universal Studio City in California in Soundstage 28, which was on display and open to the public on, like, the studio tour. And you could go in and see... there was the Opera House set was still in that soundstage, but the soundstage was unfortunately demolished in 2014. But the set is it's no longer on public display, but it's in storage, so it's still around. So if you're lucky, maybe you'll see it. And yeah, it's an incredible movie. So. So yeah, as you guys can see in those clips, Lon Chaney looks pretty scary as the Phantom, and it's actually the unmasking scene in Phantom is considered to be the first jump scare in horror, which I think is pretty cool. And it actually caused people to literally faint in the theaters, and it even scared people on set while they were filming Phantom. There was one guy who went to Lon Chaney's trailer. And Lon Chaney was in his Phantom makeup, and the dude almost peed his pants.
Which I find that funny. You're just going into his trailer to be like, hey, are you ready? He just turns around in the full makeup, and the guy just doesn't know what to do.
I mean, that's PTSD-inducing right there.
Definitely had that created some scars right there.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. And across all mediums of... and remakes of Phantom of the Opera, Lon Chaney's interpretation of the disfigurement and deformity is the most accurate to the book. So he's described as having a skull-like face with a few wisps of black hair on top of his head. And in the novel and also in the 1925 movie, the Phantom was disfigured since birth. rather than having been disfigured by acid or fire, like how he was in later adaptations of Phantom. The musical also has the Phantom being disfigured since birth, but it's a half face deformity instead of a full, like, skull deformity. And in the musical, the reason that they had the half face is when they were in rehearsals for Broadway, the Phantom was wearing the full face mask, and it was a full face deformity, but it was determined that it was too hard for the actor to emote, and it was also too hard for the audience to see the actor's facial expressions because of how deformed the face was, that they were like, let's do half the face and do a half face mask, which is now the most widely known and regarded interpretation of the Phantom. And how Lon Chaney actually pulled off this makeup is he undertook a variety of creative and probably not very healthy techniques to become the Phantom. So he actually raised the contours of his cheekbones with cotton and collodion, I think you pronounce it. It's a very flammable and syrupy solution, which is not great to put on your face. He glued his ears to his head, which made everything look more like a skull. An exaggerated skull cap was used to elevate Lon Chaney's forehead by several inches. And it was draped by flat-pressed wisps of stringy black hair. He used pencil lines to exaggerate the creases of his brow, but also to hide the lip of the bald cap, which I think is pretty cool. And then he also used wires to, like, pull back the tip of his nose and make it pointed, which actually caused a lot of bleeding and I believe, like, some broken bones in his nose as well.
Which I wouldn't know. I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, even though noses don't have bones, you can still break it. But yeah, I mean, Phantom is just one of those movies where it is truly a technical marvel that they were able to achieve that almost 100 years ago. 98 years ago, that movie came out.
God, it's crazy to think that it did come out, like, that long ago.
Yeah, 1925. I mean, that's before World War II, it's crazy that they were able to achieve that level of technical prowess and, you know, flawless execution. Although it wasn't flawless execution, there was a lot of reshoots that had to be done and a lot of production-related issues, but eventually it came out, and it did very, very, very well. Connor, what do you have any fun tidbits about Phantom that you know?
I think for me, because I recently saw the musical for the first time, and I really did like it. I think it's interesting how much they use the chandelier for that, and how they bring it up. I think that's one of my favorite things about the Phantom of the Opera. And I think the way that they do the makeup in the movie is just fantastic, to the point where, like, when I saw it, it was engraved in my mind for, like, months after.
Oh, yeah.
Like, seeing that face, I felt like I was the guy in the trailer.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. Literally. Well, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that the fact that the chandelier rises up, it's actually a perfect example of Chekhov's gun, which is a very big rule in writing scripts and things like that, where, you know, if this thing is going to be a major plot point later in the show, show it early to establish that it's there. That's a very bad paraphrase of it, but that's just off the top of my head.
That's a simple way to state it.
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, the first thing you see in Phantom is the chandelier rising up, and then ultimately that is a huge plot point with the chandelier crashing. So I think it's pretty awesome that they use that technique, even if it was inadvertent. I think it's awesome.
No, I think it's a really interesting thing because it helps the audience like keep an eye like, oh, that chandelier is so cool rising up. I've never seen that before. And then later they see it crashing down and they're like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, what I love about the chandelier on Broadway, though, it's, I can imagine that it was probably incredible in 1988. But nowadays, it's just like the slowest descent of a crash. And I find it so humorous because I love it so much. And I find it so like, it's almost like endearing in a way. It's like, oh, like that's.
It's like, oh, it's making its way downtown. It's yeah, falling like fast. Faces pass, like, and it's homebound.
Nice. Very nice.
I had to. It was right there. I was just like.
But yeah, I mean, Phantom is just one of those movies where if you haven't seen it, you should watch it. It's on multiple lists of like 100 movies you need to watch in your lifetime.
And when it comes back to Broadway, you guys like have to go see it.
Yeah, if any of my buddies from the Phantom cast are listening to this, hi guys.
Hello.
So you guys are amazing, and I hope to see you guys soon. I don't know. I feel like I've talked enough about Phantom. What do you think?
I do think that people do need to like see the Phantom of the Opera as it being, like you said before, one of the first movies to ever have like a jump scare, but also the first Universal like monster movies. So if you're a fan of like Dracula or the Wolfman or something like that, you will love this movie. Because it has that same like eeriness and that same creep factor to it, while also delivering a very powerful love story ish, you know.
Love story ish. I mean, hashtag Team Phantom.
Yeah, one party thinks it's a love story; the other party does not.
I do think it's a love story, but. We can get into that debate a different time.
I think justice for Phantom.
Thank you. I agree.
He's been through too much.
The Phantom's been through too much, man. He needs a hug. I just want to give that guy a hug and just be like, it's okay, dude.
He needs a monkey.
He has a monkey music box in the musical. Yeah.
Reference.
Well, Connor. Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, Connor, should we switch gears and talk about your flick of choice?
My flick of choice? Why not? So the movie that I chose to do a deep dive in is one of my favorite horror movies, known as Psycho, that released in 1960 by directed by Alfred Hitchcock. It has starring Anthony Perkins, Vera Miles, John Gavin. I'm terrible at pronouncing names, so I probably pronounced half of them wrong. Martin Balsam, Janet Leigh, and then John McIntyre. I'm terrible.
McIntyre.
Again, I am terrible at names.
How dare you?
How dare you? It's a miracle I got your name right. It was a 50-50, okay, Max? Your last name, pronouncing it correctly.
That's true. It's Bartos for anybody asking and wondering.
I can't believe I won the 50-50.
Yeah, you did it. Congratulations.
Now, Psycho is one of those classic horror movies, and if you guys hear like the movie Psycho, there's probably one scene that always comes to your mind, and if you want to insert that scene here, the most infamous scene.
Shower scene.
The shower scene. Yeah, which the shower scene is a very, very interesting draw for a movie because it sets up like, hey, you don't know what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden you just see the curtains open up and you see a figure just start like stabbing this young lady in the shower. And that was the big draw for me. And apparently it was also a big draw for Alfred Hitchcock. That's what made him fall in love with the movie, was the shower scene.
watching a woman get stabbed. That's a little
I know, how dare he?
He's reading the script, he's like, I like this.
The script was originally a man getting stabbed. He's like, can we change this to a woman?
Change it now.
Just change it now.
Oh, God.
But one thing that I found interesting about that shower scene is, to film it, they didn't use fake blood. They used chocolate syrup, and it appeared darker on the film when they were filming it in the black and white. So people thought like it was like a fake blood, but it wasn't. And then the other thing was, when there was the stabbing, it was actually them stabbing into a melon the entire time, just plunging a knife into a melon so that they could replicate the sound of a knife entering human flesh.
How do they know what that sounded like to begin with?
That is the one thing that I'm wondering. Like, out of all the things you're saying that you know how human flesh, like how a knife entering human flesh sounds like. It's a little creepy.
No, get rid of the squash. That doesn't sound real enough. Try a melon.
How do you know what it sounds like? Not important. Just do it.
Yeah, unimportant. I'm Alfred Hitchcock. Unimportant.
The real reason why he wanted a woman to get stabbed in the shower was because he's done it before.
Oh.
He's an expert.
Psycho's autobiographical.
But an interesting thing was, I found it interesting that Alfred Hitchcock actually like bought the rights to Psycho for just like $9,500, just $9,500. And if you like think of that like nowadays, you're just like, that's not a lot of money. It's because they really didn't think it was going to do well. They thought it was just going to bomb at the box office.
Well, Psycho 2 did. So
we don't talk about those. Psycho 2, Psycho 3, Bates Motel, Psycho 4, The Beginning, and then Psycho, the remake. And if you look at like the IMDb ratings for them, Psycho 2 has a 6.6. Psycho 3 has a 5.4. Bates Motel has a 3.8 out of 10. Which wow.
The reviews are emanating the Phantom Overture. It's just do 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 do.
It's just sad how because they tried to make like more movies on it when it didn't really Psycho didn't really need it. No. Like it felt like a standalone thing, and Alfred Hitchcock was even able to finance the movie himself. And yeah. I find that interesting. And he had someone, after he bought the rights to Psycho, go around and buy as many of like the books as possible so that he could have as little people as possible know about the twist ending at the end, because he wanted everyone to be so surprised about it. And just like, you're having a one person go around town trying to buy these books. Do you think people aren't going to question something about that? It's just a random person going into a bookstore having a whole like stack of books of the same book, and it's just like I'll just take these today.
Being inconspicuous was not a strong suit there.
No, but the ending turned out to be a big hit for them. No one, like, everyone was really surprised about it. And I feel like that's what also helped the Psycho to become one of Hitchcock's most famous works, and his like one of his best films, which apparently Psycho was also the first American film to actually show a toilet on screen.
What?
I find that hilarious.
That's incredible.
Like, out of all the things you're going to have your movie like have a milestone of, it's that it's the first movie to like see a toilet on screen, but it's also the first one where you hear a toilet being flushed.
That's like the least bad thing that happens in that movie.
I know, and I just, I'm like, wow, what an accomplishment.
Yeah, you know, really making strides in the cinematic industry,
because you know some people are gonna just remember this movie for that. Like, they're going to up to a party. They're just, like, at a bar or whatever. And they're like, hey, did you know that Psycho was the first movie to have a toilet on screen?
Yes. How to get a restraining order 101.
True.
Hey, did you know that Psycho...
that's just your talking point. That's how you get this conversation going. Psycho was also able to show, if people never notice, it has a lot of references to, like, The Birds as well, one of Hitchcock's other movies, with the stuffed birds, and I think that's interesting, and I think that might be, like, one of the first movies to be able to, like, reference another, like, another piece of work that the director's done, you know?
Yeah.
Almost like the Easter egg. And I think that's really cool for people who have seen The Birds and are like, oh, hey, look, it's a stuffed bird from that other horror movie.
I love that.
But I also think it's interesting that Norman Bates was based on an actual, like, person.
Yeah.
He was it was inspired by Ed Gein, who was also known as the Butcher of Plainfield, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, he's probably just thinking, wow, I'm so honored. I'm so honored that a movie was made after me.
Oh, he's crazy. That guy, he's literally insane. He was also the, I believe he was also the inspiration for Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
He's just out there inspiring so many horror movies.
Yeah, well, I mean, he was awful. I mean, he literally made, like, a belt out of nipples.
Yeah, he is his own horror movie icon.
I wouldn't call him
not icon, but, you know, like, horror movie villain.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
my brain is, like, going at half capacity. Okay.
No, you're good. You're good. But yeah, I think that Norman Bates is one of those killers in a horror movie that he seems so unassuming, and that's what makes him scary.
Because he seems like a normal guy, and then you find out he's just crazy.
No, literally. And I think that's the scariest thing, because in Phantom of the Opera, the Phantom was also based on a real person. Like, there was a story about a guy who, living, he got into a fire and then lived in the bowels of the Paris Opera House for a while and died down there. And there was a story about his ghost haunting the opera house. And I've actually been to the opera house in Paris, and they have, like, a whole section blocked off in box 5 for the Phantom. They actually have a big placard. Nobody can go into box 5, which I think is really cool. But, like, it's interesting that, you know, Norman Bates and the Phantom are so different, but they're both based on real life
people.
Like, people. I think that's fascinating. Because, you know, Norman Bates is, like, the crazy guy who dresses up as his mom to kill people, and the Phantom is just a cape-twirling, you know, composer sad boy.
Sad boy hours.
Literally.
You know, I think Norman Bates, the real reason why he went crazy was because the Phantom didn't get his happy ending.
I agree. The Phantom deserved more. Hashtag Team Phantom. Hashtag.
Hashtag Norman Bates.
Hashtag Norman Bates. Hashtag Team Phantom. Hashtag Justice for Phantom. No, I love that. Both of these movies I love. I would venture to say, though, that Alfred Hitchcock's best cinematic work was his work in the studio tour information speech at Universal Studios.
But one interesting thing that I found, like, Alfred Hitchcock, you know how he's, like, so into his movies?
Yeah.
He told, like, theaters to not let anyone in to see Psycho if they were showing up late. Like he full on just stopped everyone that was showing up late from seeing Psycho. And this like was what caused so many, like, lines outside of movie theaters, like that would go around the block, because everyone's now like, oh, if you're not supposed to show up late, it must be such a great film. So yeah, it ended up to be like such a good like publicity thing for them. And
I mean, that's a genius, honestly.
Alfred Hitchcock is such like, he's one of the best filmmakers in the industry.
No, literally. I think he's just so, he was so ahead of his time, but also perfectly timed.
Cause he's also like so specific with his shots. So like that,
yeah.
The shower scene, it's only 3 minutes, right? Yeah. It's only 3 minutes, but it featured 77 different camera angles, 50 different cuts, and it took 7 days to film.
Yeah.
Because of how like specific he wanted it. And it helped to create one of the most iconic horror movie scenes there is.
No, literally. I mean, there was an audition for an acting gig. It wasn't really an acting gig, but it was I saw it on Backstage, which is like the actor's audition website. And it was for a film scene study, like lighting class, they were recreating the shower scene live so that the students could learn about lighting and how that scene was like lit and stuff like that.
Cause it was lit perfectly.
It was lit perfectly, but it was like so cool to see. And it was like, yeah, we need like a Norman Bates stand in. We need the woman showering stand in. Which I thought was so cool. And like the fact, you know, he was able to create a scene that, you know, people are still studying to this day as like a perfect suspense scene is no small task.
Because the way they're able to build suspense of watching someone slowly walk up and then open up the curtain and you're not able to see who it is because of the way the lighting is. It's just, if you're able to create a scene like that, that's still being studied by film students today, then you've done something, you did something.
Yeah, then that means you've made it. Everybody always talks about like, what does it mean to like make it in your career?
That's what it means to make it.
That's
what it means. Like, yeah. He is such a genius. Like, it's not even like funny. I find it funny though that they all did think that the movie was just gonna bomb. Like, it was gonna be awful. Yeah. But he was the only one that like had faith in the movie. Like, even Paramount was against, like, the idea of Hitchcock making Psycho. And they're like, the only way we'll do it is if you, like, help finance it. So he gave up, like, was able to produce the film himself. And he took a 60% stake in the film's box office and put, like, $250,000 into it. And the movie made $15 million.
Yeah. He did great.
Because he knew, like, it doesn't matter if I like how I made the film, I like how I made the film. Yeah. He didn't care if it bombed, he just cared about making it.
Oh, literally. And it's like, you know, directors and things like that have such a strong bond to their film. Like, even, like, when it comes to the actors playing the characters.
It's a part of them. And, like, the other interesting thing was, because in the novel, Marion Crane was supposed to be beheaded in the shower for that scene. And he decided to change it to the stabbing because he felt like that built more, like, suspense.
Yeah.
So being able to, like, just picture that in your mind, being like, this isn't going to work how I want. It's not really going to get a good draw to it. I'm going to change it to this so it helps create that bigger suspense. Like, oh my God, what is happening right now? Make it a slower death. And
can I just say, Norman Bates' smile in the last scene is haunting.
I still picture that face.
Why, she wouldn't even harm a fly.
Yeah, that face is horrifying.
And also, Hitchcock was even able to do a cameo in the movie, in Psycho 2. Where he was just wearing a hat outside of Marion's office window.
Yeah.
Just I find that funny too, that he was even able to put his himself in.
He Stan Lee'd himself.
He Stan Lee'd him. He may be the first Stan Lee. Who knows?
Who knows?
But if you guys have not seen Psycho, and you're like a someone that wants to study film or just loves horror movies, you need to see Psycho. You need to see all of Alfred Hitchcock's movies, because the way he films them, the way the camera angles are, the lighting is just perfect in every scene. And if you're watching Psycho, just stop at Psycho 1. You don't need to watch the other ones. You're fine. You're not missing anything. If you want to watch a better movie, just watch Velocipastor. Just go to that. Or just anything but those, because you know they're bad. If none of them can get, like, the second one got a 6.6 out of 10, and then nothing was higher than that after.
That's rough.
They were all 4 to 5 out of 10. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, that's sad.
Well, guys, thank you so much for listening to our deep dive, to our ramble, to our nerd summoning. I love talking about Phantom of the Opera, so if you guys have any other, you know, fun things that, you know, I should say about it, or any fun tidbits of information that you guys know, like, you know, DM me on Instagram. I'd love to hear them and talk to you guys about Phantom and share my obsession with it.
Phantom is a great movie, and it has a great fan base, you know?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, we're a strong fan base. I think I would venture to say stronger than Psychos.
I mean, probably, but Psycho, you know, but only Psychos. If you talk about Alfred Hitchcock in general, I think that outweighs Phantom.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you guys again for listening, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you later, you mortals.
Insert organ music here.
Insert organ music here. Just add laughter in the background. Oh, I can't do my reverb. I was going to try to do a reverb laugh, but it won't work.